The Monologue.
We tell you this almost daily on the show, that what happens in Seattle doesn't stay in Seattle. Bad policy spreads. And problems that you see in Seattle have a tendency to spread as well. And we warn everyone. We've warned cities like Puyallup, Olympia, Tacoma, Bellingham, Bellevue. We've warned, do not allow your communities to adopt the Seattle way of life. Don't adopt Seattle-style policies. Don't do it. And some have listened and seen some progress. Bellevue is a great example. They don't want to become Seattle because they know what that means. Tacoma has been a failure in a lot of ways. The city of Edmonds, they decided, yeah, we're not going to go down that road on homelessness. We've seen what happened in Seattle. And so last night, finally, they voted 5-2 in favor of an ordinance which bans homeless camping. Now folks will face a fine or jail time if they refuse an offer of housing when there's space available. When there's not space available, this ordinance will not apply. But if they have an open bed, if they have a shelter space, and you are illegally camping and you refuse, they have the right now, the police have now the right to arrest or fine you. And this was inspired, as Councilmember Neil Tibbett said, this was inspired by not wanting to turn into a Seattle.
I'm very familiar with the encampments that I saw personally at Green Lake and Woodland Park. And it just grew and grew and grew until Seattle decided to clear that out.
This is a smart way to approach the issue. They look at what works. They look at what doesn't. They can look to Marysville, which has been very effective. Bellevue, very effective in how they've dealt with homelessness. Do you see very many homeless people in a park in Bellevue? Nope. Because they actually enforce the law. They do it in a compassionate way because this is always about helping first. Marysville, same thing. They go up to you and they say, look, you cannot camp here. We will give you the help that you need, but you're going to have to say yes. And if you say yes, you've got our full support. If you say no, okay, that's on you. Get out. You are not wanted here. We're not going to allow you to ruin your life and the lives of people who are just trying to go about their day. We're not going to allow it. And Edmonds, as a city, decided to step up and do exactly the same thing. This is not going to end homelessness, but this is going to mitigate its impact on communities. And in a perfect scenario, in a perfect world, this will incentivize at least some of the homeless people to say, okay, yes, I will take your help. If they're not willing to accept help, they're going to be living out on the streets forever. And this gives a little bit of teeth, a little bit of teeth to their policy of getting someone the help that they need. So I love this. Now, the city still, under this ordinance, needs to provide notice of up to 72 hours if you're going to confiscate any property. The measure caused some concern amongst the folks, many of whom I don't even think live in Edmonds, saying, oh, this is just criminalizing poverty. No, it's criminalizing criminal behavior. It's not necessarily against homeless camping, although obviously that inspired it. No one, if I wanted to camp out there, I wouldn't be able to. The law is the law, and if you don't like it, okay. It's on you. You're outvoted. Thank you. All available shelter officials can offer the homeless who can offer the homeless some space have to be within a 35-mile radius of Edmonds City Hall. This is a good plan. I like it. I'm down.
The interview.
It was a bipartisan move by the King County Council. They're looking to keep pot shops safe since they are being targeted disproportionately by criminals. It's a crime that's been really easy to get away with for the most part. Joining me on the line is King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason, thanks for having me on.
This was your brainchild, so take us through, what is the Cannabis Task Force, or the Cannabis Safety Task Force?
Well, it's a rare enforcement task force that I was able to get through the council unanimously that will bring the sheriff's office and the prosecutor's office and members of the marijuana industry together to make these pot shops safer. As you know, there's been over 70 shootings in and around pot shops in the state of Washington, a bunch in King County recently in my district, and we need to do more to keep them safe.
What does the task force actually do? Who makes up the task force?
So we're going to have detectives and members of the King County Sheriff's Office, the King County Prosecutor's Office. The DEA has agreed to take part in it as well. You're going to have members of the industry, some private security, and other experts as we see fit. I'll probably sit on it as well. And we're going to figure out ways to get enforcement initiatives and other processes in place to really guard and provide security at these pot shops. So, for example, one of the ideas is to liaison a sheriff's deputy or a pair of deputies to a particular shop. So every shop has a liaison of what we call community policing, where that deputy can stop by a few times a day, maybe park out front, fill out reports, do that sort of thing, so that there is a liaison that can be there and be present to deter criminals who would prey on those high cash businesses.
Yeah, but does the King County Sheriff's Office have the staff to do that?
Well, you know, they're not doing a whole lot right now with crime at an all-time high, with, you know, murder rates, 460 shootings last year, and it's up even more this year. Yeah. But the shootings are happening in around marijuana dispensaries. So I think the most basic requirement of local government is to protect the public, and it's happening around these pot shops. So we better focus on those enforcement initiatives right now.
Yeah, but, you know, I imagine there's going to be some business owner out there or some, you know, resident who says, hey, I get that that's a problem, but to Reagan's point, we're also seeing record numbers of gunfire outside of pot shops. What can be done on that? Are we giving too much attention to the pot shops at the expense of every other business?
The answer to that is no. We won't be now. But let me tell you this. There are 113 vacancies in the King County Sheriff's Office.
Yep.
The woke left has done everything they can to defund, disarm, and disparage law enforcement, which is why no one is applying. If you want to stop crime, studies show, and I ran and authored President Bush's national effort to fight gun violence, a program that was measured across the country of making huge reductions in violent crime. What you do is you aggressively enforce our laws. You put violent offenders behind bars where they can't reoffend, period. Studies show that the overwhelming majority of these offenses are repeat offenders. It's the same cluster of bad guys that are committing mm-hmm. the crime. So you arrest, prosecute them, put them behind bars. They won't reoffend. It is the counteraction to what the woke left wants to do, which is non-commissioned officers and social workers encountering violent offenders, which doesn't work. But what you got to do is start with things like a marijuana enforcement task force that might recommend a specialized unit and deputies to be put in place on these pot shops. That's as we're slowly turning around the arguments. This is an important part of these enforcement units, these specialized units that I am seeking to put together here.
Do you think under the new sheriff, you're going to see more of the wokeness lean in to the department or not?
I just asked her just a few minutes ago during her confirmation hearing about those questions. And, you know, what are you going to do to protect the public? We've had all kinds of talk about liaisoning here. What are you going to do to hold these violent offenders accountable? And she did acknowledge that it's the most important part of her job, protecting the public. So that was something. She did talk a bit about community policing. I supported her nomination, and I hope that she will be successful. But who knows? I hope that she has the strength and the independence of mind to push back on Executive Constantine and the council when they start talking about these far-left policies and pushing this social workers dealing with violent offenders, which is just a total fantasy of the left. So I hope I'm worried, but I think she's better than a lot of candidates we could have had.
Well, there you go. Reagan Dunn is a King County Council member. He's also running for Congress in Washington's 8th Congressional District. Thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Now this.
The interview.
This is a very insane story. A coworker of mine was randomly shot at while at a golf course in Seattle. In fact, on my Twitter feed right now, you'll see a photo of his car that has three bullet holes in it, as well as a tire that apparently was shot. And of course, because it's Seattle, it has to get even weirder and more alarming. He was on the phone with his mother at the time that this happened. Joining me on the line is the coworker who prefers to not have his name out there. Welcome to the show.
Cool. Thanks, Jason.
So, okay, this is insane. First of all, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm happy to be alive and here talking with you. So I'm doing all right.
Okay, so what happened exactly?
Yeah, so I mean, it was just kind of a normal day for me. After work, went to the driving range, hit a bucket of balls, chipped and putt, and then went back to my car, loaded up my clubs, and was sitting there, had a missed call, so I called my mom back and just talking to her for a little bit, and then all of a sudden this weird old-looking red van pulled up behind me. Mind you, I'm parked nose in facing the first tee, so I figured I was in a pretty good spot. And I just noticed this red old van pull up behind me. I kind of look in my driver's side mirror and took a look at him. Didn't really think anything of it. I saw him inch forward a little bit more and took another glance into my mirror. And all of a sudden I thought golf balls were hitting my car, but wow. Turns out they were actually, they were gunshots.
How close was he?
I mean, think of me pulled into a parking spot and a car parked right behind it.
So very close.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And thankfully he missed you, but when did you realize they were gunshots?
I think my mom actually noticed that first, because she was like, are you getting hit by golf balls or what's going on? And I kind of took a second, because I hit the deck as soon as, you know, there's loud noises going on in the car, and put my head right on the passenger seat. And I think that's about right when I noticed that I'm being shot at.
Wow. Do you know what kind of gun it was? Is this a handgun?
Yeah, just a handgun. I don't know the caliber.
Okay. Up until this moment, had you had any contact with this guy before that you're aware of?
No. It was a very quiet day at the golf course. Everyone seemed to be minding their own business, and I was just in my car for about 10 minutes, right, about ready to take off.
Maybe you were holding up the spot and he wanted to pull in.
I mean, there's plenty of spots he could have taken, but I mean, that could be the case. You never know.
Yeah, to talk about road rage, parking rage. So he shoots at you, you take, you know, you duck for cover, then what happens? He just drives off?
Yeah, so I'm ducking and covering for about five seconds or so, and I peek back up to look in my mirror to see if he's still there, because he had me blocked in at the time. Notice he wasn't there. I threw my car in reverse, peeled out of there, and pulled right up to the kind of main gate that you get to the pro shop to, and parked my car and ran up to the pro shop, and I'm thankful for the guys that were in there. They were very nice and helped me out and calmed me down a bit. And then the cops arrived on the scene probably 4 or 5 minutes later.
So it was actually 10 minutes later, according to the incident report. But we'll go with 4 or 5 minutes, because that makes an understaffed Seattle Police Department look a little bit better. You go into the pro shop. I'm trying to figure out how you were acting to them. Was this I'm running into the shop screaming, I've just been shot at? How did that go?
Well, it was funny. There's actually two kids working in the pro shop, and they were like, did you hear those gunshots? And I was like, yeah, I think they were trying to hit me. And so, I mean, wow. I was a little frantic in the time, and again, very thankful for those guys in the shop.
Yeah.
They told me get on the phone with 911 immediately, place that call, let them know where I'm at, what happened, gave them all the details I could, and then, yeah.
So as far as I can tell, there's no video surveillance of what happened. Is that still the case?
There's no video in the parking lot.
Yeah, because of where the location was. Obviously, there's surveillance around there, and maybe police who are currently investigating this, maybe they're able to spot the car, because you know the color of the car. Who was the driver? Like, how did you explain who the driver was to police when they asked?
Just a sketchy-looking individual. The description I gave, he could have been anywhere from 35 to 55, just kind of a dirty looking guy. Car was beat to, you know what. And that's really the only description I could give, keeping in mind that I only saw him through my driver's side mirror for about a couple of seconds.
Oh, totally. And, you know, you and I off air were speaking, you said he kind of looked like maybe he was a drug user.
I mean, he fit the script. No,
yeah, obviously he doesn't know that. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with a coworker of mine who was the victim of a drive-by shooting that appears to have been targeted. We're not entirely sure why. So you've now had some time to think about what happened, because this happened very recently.
Mm-hmm. Last night.
And, you know, your poor mother, who's on the phone with you, how did she react when she realized what was happening?
Oh, she was freaking out. She told me to get the F out of there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, that's when I threw the car in reverse and knew I had to either get to the pro shop. I wasn't able to drive home with that tire. Mm-hmm. So I just ran up to the pro shop, and, yeah, they were very nice up there and helped, took care of me.
What did police say to you?
They kind of questioned me if I had any gang or drug affiliation.
Just very quickly for folks, this coworker, if you were ever going to describe someone as a potentially a gang member or a drug dealer, not him, not this dude. Yeah. Definitely not.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, Elizabeth, you definitely would be playing against type if you were. So they ask you these questions, which obviously they're trying to get to the motive, because if it's a drive-by shooting with someone who might look like they are drugged out or an addict, that could play to the motive. But obviously you said no, unless you're leading a double life. And, you know, I don't know how you make extra money on the side. I don't know. No questions here. What happened?
Yeah. And then, I mean, they just kind of asked me where I was parked. If I recognized the guy, is there any reason why someone would be coming after me? And honestly, I think the only reason why he started shooting was because I saw him in the mirror. Kind of this parking lot's a little notorious for having break-ins. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I spooked him by making eye contact with him through my mirror or some sort, but, the guy just must have been, you know, on something and, paranoid.
Yeah, and the fact that he didn't have particularly good aim obviously played to your advantage, because he was not far from you when he was shooting at you.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank God. From your perspective, you're now less than 24 hours away from this, and you seem relatively calm. I get a little bit of nerves from you, but I think it's because you're on the radio. But what's going through your mind right now?
I'm just thankful that I didn't get hit, really. It kind of puts a little bit of perspective on life, you know? Mm-hmm. Just crazy stuff can happen, and I guess just tell your loved ones that you love them, and I mean, that's really kind of what I all got from it, just a little perspective check.
Yeah, for sure, because you're, how old are you?
25.
Yeah, so this is not something that most 25-year-olds experience, unless, of course, they are in gangs or involved in some sort of criminal enterprise. Are you going to use this at all to your advantage, maybe get some extra love in the building?
Not at all, man. I'm here to work, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, that's a mistake. See, I've been trying to get him to come under my wing for a while so I can convince him how to really work the system, but it turns out he's able to advance on his own. Do you want to say what the phone call was about with your mother?
Sounds like I got a job promotion, so I was just sharing the news with her on that.
Yeah, so you get called for a job promotion in the building. Didn't have to use, and by the way, if it didn't come, I would use this shooting as a way to leverage more money, a bigger salary. Like, hey, I almost died for the bit. Just lie and say you were doing this for the job. I almost died for you. I think you can cough up another $8,000 a year on my salary.
Oh, hey, if you could vouch for me, we can make that happen.
There you go. I definitely vouch for you. I'm so sorry that you had to experience this, although at the end of the day, I'm glad you're okay, other than some, you know, frayed nerves and a car that needs to be. Does that get covered by insurance? I don't even know how that works. Someone shoots at
you. Yeah. Yeah, I'm waiting to hear back, but it sounds like it's just going to be marked kind of as a vandalism.
Okay. I mean, technically that's accurate. It is vandalism. I appreciate you telling us your story. I'm glad you're doing okay, and I'll see you in the office in a couple days. Congratulations on the big promotion.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
Of course. Wow. Just imagine having that phone call, talking to mom. Hey, mom, guess what? I just got promoted at the job. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of gunshots are headed your way. It's terrifying stuff. If you want to see the photo of the damage to his car, go to our Twitter feed, twitter.com/JasonRants. Or, of course, just text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant has followed that into Taylor's radio host in Seattle. He broke the story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Whole lot of problems facing this country right now for parents who are trying to feed their newborns. It is particularly bad. It is particularly threatening to the health and well-being of their children. There is a baby formula shortage, and there really isn't an end in sight, although we have a little bit more news trending in the right direction, I suppose. Joining me on the line is someone who cares deeply about this and helped uncover a pretty absurd aspect to this story, Representative Kat Kamick from Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So you posted on your social media accounts for your Congress accounts that you found out basically that we were giving illegal immigrants baby formula at the expense of taxpayers, people who aren't breaking the law, people who are, you know, American citizens.
Yeah, you know, in the midst of this wild deal where you can't find baby formula anywhere across the United States, it seems. I had Border Patrol agents text me photos at the border of stockpiles of formula and diapers and wipes. Meanwhile, they're saying, I'm bringing this in. I'm having to unload this off a pallet. And I go down the road to my local Target or Walmart, and I can't get it for my own kids or my grandkids. And so from the frustration that our Border Patrol agents were experiencing, we posted these photos and apparently lit a fire under some folks, because the next thing I know, CNN and Washington Post mm-hmm. and the White House are coming after me. And that's when we decided to really lean in. And we were definitely not going to let the liberal media and the White House get off the hook, because let's be honest, the Biden FDA created this baby formula shortage, and we could redistribute everything from the border back into shelves on America, but it wouldn't make a dent, because this crisis is so big that it really is requiring millions and millions and millions of cans of baby formula to make up what they have taken out of the marketplace. So yeah, it's been a real interesting week of taking a lot of heat from the left, but we're going to keep on doing it, because American moms and dads, they deserve better. And again, this just points to the America Last policies that this administration continues to champion.
It really is remarkable how, you know, America Last could just be, you know, some talking point that Republicans use because they're all about America First. Except, no, the Biden administration really is not putting the American people first. We are being put last. And, you know, we heard the news today or yesterday, I guess, that there's some sort of an agreement that Abbott is going to be able to reopen its facilities at some point in the next few weeks. But there's no real hard timetable, at least that I've seen. And once they're up and running, it's still going to take some time to get the formula out to the actual shops. What do you think this administration should be doing differently right now?
Well, first, they need to stop lying. The administration came out and said that they had a plan from day one.
Yeah.
Well, that's simply not true.
It's so absurd. It's just so absurd, because they're like, oh, we've been working 24-7 on... No, you haven't. You've been working 24-7, but you've not spoken about this publicly until after Republicans finally brought it up?
Yeah. No, it's absolutely absurd that they have said that they have had a plan and have been working on this from day one. It is amazing to me that in the span of a week, because of the outrage that we have, exposed, you know, in showing what is happening to American moms and dads, what's happening at the border, that has created the firestorm that has actually forced this administration to take action. And in the span of a week, we now have loosened regulations, and we have been given clearance to import the millions of cans that we need to take care of this backfill that's been empty. So don't tell me that they've been working a plan for the last several months, because they haven't. And that is just an outright lie. And we certainly will hold them to account for that statement. But when you look at the whistleblower and the case in the Abbott facility in the fall, it took them several months to actually conduct an investigation mm-hmm. into the facility. And once that investigation was done, of course, there was that voluntary recall that Abbott did. But then the thing that is really frustrating to me is they conduct this investigation, the CDC and the FDA, instead of widely publicizing to restore confidence and to be truthful and upfront with the American public about what really happened with this investigation, they quietly do a press release and use some very clever campaign political spin on it. The fact of the matter is that the investigation that the Biden administration did revealed that there was no connection between the bacteria that was found to have killed those infants, tragically, those two infants. That was a horrible, horrific experience. My heart just breaks for those families. But there was no connection between the bacteria that took the lives of those infants and the bacteria found in the plant. There was no connection. So that's back in March. Since March, they've been sitting on this information. They have not allowed the Abbott facility to get back up and running. There's been very little communication about it. And here we are, it's May. It's going to take weeks now, probably 2 weeks, for the Abbott facility in Michigan to get back up to operational status. And then you're looking at 6 to 8 weeks for production to catch up and ramp up. That is unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable. And again, I come back to, this administration would not have taken action had it not been for moms and dads across this country starting to get frustrated and speak out and contact members of Congress. And I honestly, and I shared this with the Border Patrol agents that shared those photos with me today. I said, had you guys not sent me those photos and we had not gotten those photos out on the national news, we probably would be still spinning our wheels. And once again, it's Border Patrol agents on the front lines protecting not only our nation, but protecting our moms and dads across the country, really from their own administration. And to me, that's just absolutely ridiculous, but indicative of where we are with this America Last administration.
Turns out you shouldn't be messing with birthing people. We're talking with Congresswoman Kat Kamick, Republican from Florida. Just switching gears briefly, the Department of Homeland Security announced today that they're basically pausing the Disinformation Governance Board. We saw that the leader stepped down. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it speaks to the effectiveness of what conservatives and patriots and, quite frankly, we the people are capable of, despite the fact that we are the minority in the House, in the Senate, and, of course, we don't have the White House. But the public outrage of this off-Broadway wannabe, you know, singer as the czar in charge of the Ministry of Truth terrified people, from, you know, seniors to parents and everyone in between. They're looking around saying there is no way that this character, quite literally and deliberately, I'm using that word, this character is going to be in charge of being the arbiter of truth. Because I can guarantee you, had this department been fully operational, they would have been the first ones out here to say that there is no baby formula shortage. And they would have been the first to say that the border is secure. Americans are not stupid. We know what is going on. We're living with the consequences of this administration every single day. And for this administration to pretend like we're living in an alternate reality, it's just not right. And so it was 3 weeks and now they're done and she has resigned and hopefully that's the end of that. But I have a sneaking suspicion they're going to try to resurrect this Ministry of Truth in some way or some fashion here in the next few months.
Yeah, I do too. Just calling it something else and making it less public, which obviously is alarming. Very quickly before we let you go, also yesterday, a lot of primary races were called. One of your colleagues, Madison Cawthorn, ends up losing his reelection bid. What do you make of that? Is that something that Republicans have to pay attention to, or was it maybe a little bit more specific to the congressman?
You know, I can't really speak to that race because I don't serve in North Carolina, but I can tell you that anymore these days, Americans want to see their representatives at home. They want to see their representatives a part of the community. And so for me, we've made a point of trying to get home as often as possible. I don't think that this is a referendum on Trump. I don't think that this is Representative Cawthorn's loss is indicative of Trump's influence or waning influence. I don't think that's the case at all. I think that it is indicative of what people expect in a representative. And I think that there was a little bit of a disconnect there, and probably won't be the last time that we see Madison, but I think that his district was maybe looking for something a little different.
Yeah, and to be clear, President Trump has had a very good night and very good campaign season so far in who he's backing.
Yes.
He's not going to get them all right,
absolutely,
which kind of understand. I
there's a couple missteps, maybe the one in Idaho that we'll skip over because that was not a good endorsement. But a lot of the other ones have been really good. Kat Kamik, Congresswoman from Florida, thank you so much for stopping by, as always.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
Ezra Miller is an actor who some of you probably know as The Flash from the Justice League films. He was prominently in the last Justice League. He made a little bit of an appearance in the first one. And he's a tremendous actor who, unfortunately, is troubled. Tremendous actor. If you haven't seen it's a disturbing, emotionally disturbing movie. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's called We Need to Talk About Kevin. I think it's actually based on a book. And he's troubled, unfortunately. He keeps getting into trouble with the law, although usually he gets out of any consequences. But he was recently arrested, and recent, it was several weeks ago, but he was arrested in Hawaii. And he was arrested because of an altercation he got with someone during a karaoke event. And I believe they believe that he was drunk at the time, which seems to be some of the trend in his altercations with the law. He was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct and harassment after this incident at the karaoke bar where, according to Hawaii police, he became irate after being asked to leave a get-together at a Big Island home and then threw a chair, hitting a woman in the forehead. According to the Hawaii Police Department, they say Miller began yelling obscenities at one point, grabbed the microphone from a 23-year-old woman singing karaoke, and then lunged at a 32-year-old man playing darts. The bar owner asked Miller to calm down several times. He obviously didn't. He ends up getting arrested. Okay. So we now have body cam footage of the arrest. And it caught the attention of Fox News Digital because of a particular statement that was made by Ezra Miller, who is biologically male, but he claims to not have a gender. And so he prefers to use or have the pronoun used they, them, theirs, or some other that he throws in there. And it's coming up because, as we kind of predicted a while ago, there are certainly going to be instances in which police, any member of law enforcement, is probably eventually going to get fired for not using the personal pronoun preferred by the suspect, including in cases where you would not even reasonably know, because Ezra Miller is a man. He's not a transgender person who's presenting as female. He is a male. He presents as a male from the naked eye, and including when he's naked, he's a male, but he is non-binary, he says. And so I want you to listen to the interaction he has with this cop.
Not a sir. I'm transgender, not binary. You can refer to me as sir. It's not a binary.
Okay.
So I don't know if you can hear. I'm not a sir. I'm non-binary. Listen again.
Not a sir. I'm transgender, not binary. You can refer to me as sir. It's not a
binary. Okay. I was just trying to be respectful.
If you fail to do that again, that is an act of intentional bigotry. And
If you do that again, it's an intentional act of bigotry.
Be respectful.
If you fail to do that again, that is an act of intentional bigotry, and it is a technical hate crime according to U.S. federal law.
It's a technical hate crime. It's not a hate crime to misgender someone, intentionally or not. It's not a crime. It's not a hate crime.
Please call me they, them, theirs. You can use the term mix or mixia if you prefer.
Mix is MX. I've actually never heard that one before. I guess it makes sense. You're putting X's in there, like women with an X. Women. This is absurd. It's absurd. And no, it's not a hate crime. Especially in this context, it's definitely not a hate crime. But this is what I will expect is going to happen more and more and more often. We've got the instances of now giving licenses out that have an X gender, and I have joked about this, semi-joked, I'm actually serious, where I think there's going to be an instance in which someone is on the loose, a criminal, who has gender X listed on their ID, and some cop is going to have to say, this suspect is on the loose, I can't tell you the gender because I don't want to lose my job. I guarantee you that that happens. Now, in this case, Miller pleaded guilty, pleaded no contest to the disorderly conduct charge. He was handed a $500 fine, and he was barred from the karaoke bar. A rep for Miller did not immediately respond to Fox News' request. So, this is so absurd. Don't call me sir! I'm just trying to be polite and respectful. Call me they, them, their, or Nix, or Mix. How about I just call you the suspect who's under arrest?
The Last Rants.
And with that, this does bring up, I think, a point that should sometimes be made, or a point that I should remind you of. I clearly disagree with the idea that gender doesn't exist. It very clearly does. There's only two genders. Now, that does not mean I don't accept people who have a gender identity based on a concept I don't think is real. I will be respectful of people unless they're disrespectful to me. And in the case of Ezra Miller, for example, no, he is not someone who has no gender or is non-binary. No. Now, I'm not going to go out of my way if I were to meet Ezra Miller to be a jerk about it. And I don't think any of us should. And I do think that some people purposefully use language that is meant to either hurt the person's feeling or just to disrespect them. And that's unnecessary. And I wish some of you guys would stop doing that. Now, not all of you do it. In fact, I'm assuming the vast majority of people who are listening to me right now, either on the podcast or on the radio show, do that. But some people do. I've heard folks who are talking to someone who's, or talking about someone who's very clearly, legitimately transgender in that they are living as a woman, despite being male or vice versa, and they are not doing it for some political point. That's just who they are. Now, you don't have to accept it personally, but you don't have to go around and say, hey, dude, look at this dude. I find that to be disrespectful unnecessarily. Don't do that. Let's have honest conversations about this, and it doesn't mean that you have to accept anything, but it means you should maybe choose not to be a jerk. And I think all of us will be better off in a world where people are choosing not to be jerks. And that's the last rants.